There are, of course, outstanding differences, such as the dome-shaped crystalline roof structures which you have become familiar with, which seem to fill the room with some particularly bright shades of green. The desk-like furniture is also different from the old dark mahogany wood structures in your school, in as much as they, too, are made of some brightly glowing crystalline material. These people, too, are somewhat vaguely different from the earth people whom you see about you every day, inasmuch as they seem to have a sort of transparency in that they assume or absorb somewhat the radiance which fills the room. Yes, these are people from the earth. They are the psychic bodies, the astral psychic selves, of real-life earth people whose physical bodies are at this very moment in their respective homes, sound asleep. These people are, at the moment, as you see them before you, being taught some of the more spiritual ways of life. In fact, many of the things which you have been shown, and which we have discussed, are being firmly implanted. In a few hours they will return to their respective bodies, and in the morning when they awaken they will not remember, consciously, where they have been during the night time. I may say, however, that in the following days of their earth life, they may wonder at some seemingly strange things that happen to them which they cannot otherwise explain, which may be actually some of the truth or personal directions given in these night classes on Venus. They may accidentally, as it were, pick up a certain book in some lending library, or in a nearby shop, and in thumbing through the pages run across a paragraph which seems to open up a whole new world of thinking. They may accidentally meet some long-lost friend, who may start some chain of circumstances which shall also seem to cause some strange and incredible happening. But whatever the way, such circumstance seems to unlock a certain door which opens up a new world and with it a succession of spiritual demonstrations. This chain was actually started and directed by what they had learned in these night classes. You, yourself, and Sister Ruth have attended these classes. It might be said that Sister Ruth at one time almost lost herself in a series, or succession, of such classes which lasted about 2 weeks. When I say lost, I do not mean to imply that she was in a dangerous position, but she did suffer a great deal of physical difficulty with some seeming lack of coordination. She must remember, however, she was actually directing her body through her umbilical cord from the classroom to her earth body. Such a connection, which is sometimes called the silver cord, is always maintained by an individual who so temporarily separates himself in a dimensional way from his physical body. In case there are those who are reading these lines who might think this rather incredible, I could recite numerous examples from your Bible and other historical works, or even cite true cases, in your own time, in which the persons involved had a complete and conscious happening of such astral flights. Many of the great inventions, works of art, poetry, political leadership or outstanding spiritual work are always related to people who are sufficiently advanced in their evolution that they take such astral flights into classrooms such as this, during their periods of sleep or meditation. Sir Isaac Newton often sat for hours while his mind was in a far-off place, being taught the higher principles of calculus, and when he returned to his consciousness would proceed to rush madly to write it all down. Thomas Edison had a cot in his laboratory where, at almost hourly intervals, he would lie down for a short nap, and in such sleep state would ascend into some far-off classroom or laboratory where he would find the next step or the solution to a new invention. As I have said, I could cite numerous examples, but if you are curious you can consult the autobiographies of great men and women who have left something to posterity for their fellow men. They always have some particular way of sleep or meditation for such astral or spiritual flights into such domains, either here on Venus or on the countless places of learning in some of the other higher astral planes which were most suitable for their purpose. You will always find in a close scrutiny of the lives of any truly great persons that all have found in their own way the key to their personal communion. Some may say that they are inspired purely from the cosmic God, and this is quite true. For the infinite God within you is always the causation for your best and noblest acts. Such personal relationship with God is always responsible for the greatest expressions, the most unselfish acts, the soft kindness of one man to another. but there is a definite relationship of this God with every mind in the universe, and of any other universes or dimensions. The God within you will cause you to seek out the way which is most suited for the expression of himself toward your fellow man. And while this may be a large or small expression of himself toward your fellow man, yet each one is an important part of your life. This God will also cause you to seek out others who may be more advanced in their evolution, that you may gain new knowledge of expression in Godship through this spiritual companionship. In this there are no separations, for your physical world is only an outward expression for your true self. And in the countless evolutions which are before you, you will seek out newer and better ways of communion and expression. Yes, we here on Venus are a part of a vast network of spiritual planets, or planes if you would call them such, who are engaged, not only in the salvage and therapy of human wreckage, but actively participate in teaching untold thousands from the lower earth planes. And while this number is small, yet each day the numbers are increasing, for may I say that, to your own earth, this is the time of a new awakening. It is the beginning of the seventh day of the Lord, as it is quoted in your Bible. It is the ending time of all the old prophecies and their fulfillments. It will be the time dot of ending for the cold wars and the spiritual distresses of the nations of Vor Earth, and while these changes may take place slowly, yet surely they must come to pass, for the hourglass of a new world has been reversed and the sands have already begun to trickle through. In your future days, dear friends, it may be the seemingly unexplained happening or coincidence which will lead you into the spiritual pathway, or it may be that suddenly even more of the great abundance of spiritual blessings are suddenly added to you. Then you may be quite sure that you are, unnoticed by yourself, attending some spiritual classroom, and while you may not have the conscious memory of having done so, yet surely you will find that in manifesting the new way or the new abundance that you have been given proof of such attendance. And so for the moment, and for the coming hours, may I see you sometime here on Venus. Brother Malvar, Chapter Xil, a pleasant day to you, brother and sister. I see that you are still standing in the classroom which we visited on our previous occasion, and as there are still many important questions in your mind, we will also, likewise, in answering your questions, anticipate those of your fellow Earthmen. You may have thought it odd that you found this group of Earth people sitting at their desks, which were quite clearly molded after the pattern of the desks which were used by these people as youngsters. Aside from being utilitarian, the main purpose was that learning and being taught here on Venus would fill in some very obvious gaps in their previous scholastic education. Your Earth system of education reminds me somewhat of a great sieve where the youngsters are pressed through and all emerge exactly the same size and shape. I am using this as the mental metaphor. There is a singular lack of proper education in the spiritual concepts. I do not mean the kind which are associated with parochial schools, nor of any such theologies, which are more or less orthodox. And while these religious concepts seem to fill the need for some sort of Sunday activities, such inspirational values as are thus incurred are quickly lost in the shuffle on Monday. There is also a singular lack of recognizing the individual propensities of each child. While there has been some vague attempts to individualize the child, there has not yet been a constructive idea or movement to properly institute a spiritual educational system which can be combined with their other scholastic activities. Neither will there be any attempts, until such further day when the various sects and denominations quit quarreling among themselves long enough to form such a spiritual combination. I might say this also would not contain the unrealistic and confusing elements which are contained in the expression of many of the denominations and sects. Such a program would have to be instituted and moralized by an entirely new age concept, new at least to many of those who would have to support it, while their sons and daughters were being educated. We, who have been on the path for a long time, know these truths and principles. The other factor in individualizing a child's educational program is only crudely recognized by letting the child wander around the classroom, swishing his hands in paint or pinching a piece of modeling clay into some shapeless form. It is theorized that a child should seek out, in such a free expression, his latent talents. However, only an old soul in a child's body could thus individualize his own strongest personalized traits. With the average child, these traits are too submerged and interwoven with lesser traits which, when compiled together from such outside stimuli as curiosity in his new world, will often cause a child to seek out some rather strange and unrelated or even abortive expressions. No serious attempt is really made to direct his life expression or a vocational guidance until he reaches the last few years of his education. By that time he will have formed very strong and very definite thought patterns and philosophies. Under such conditions he has not the proper perspective to relate himself to his true purpose. He will often wander the world and his eyes filled with the glamour of fame and easy money which he thinks could be his through some field of endeavor to which he is entirely unsuited. He quite often goes through life in the pursuance of these false objectives and thus comes to the end of his days unsuccessful, bitter and frustrated. In escaping his physical body he may, after several reincarnations, find himself entering one of the great colleges or universities in one of the more highly evolved astral planets. There he will complete his education and his specialized training, which will later on permit him to again appear on the earth and in his true expression. He thus becomes the great artist or poet or scientist. And in bringing to a full conclusion his rightful expression, he will have dissipated the heavy load of karma. It is easy to see that a more logical course to pursue would be one in which the educational factors were included in each child's life, which would enable him to at least start, if not fully become, whatever it was that his cosmic mind had conceived him to be. It would only be necessary to make an accurate diagnosis of each child's potentialities and then institutionalize him through his educational period in what he was best adapted to do. This is being done on countless other planets, such as the one with which you are more familiar in your own solar system and who you call Mars. It is quite obvious, after a bit of careful thought, that your Earth plane would soon be a new place with a new way of life, if such a program were fully exploited. And it would save many people many needless reincarnations and thousands of years of time in gaining their rightful expression. Our educational system here on Venus is not confined to teaching small groups in such capacities as would first start them on their right pathway. The people in this room are learning certain things which will be fitted in the proper place in their Earth life so that by utilizing this knowledge in their future days, there will be no obvious deficiency of which they might be vaguely aware if this placing is not done. Even the desks fit in with the scene. In this city there are many other classrooms as well as a number of auditoriums, all of which have functional purposes of serving the needs of different groups or intellectual strata of the lower orders of Earth planets. Many of the higher masters often come and give lectures and demonstrations in these auditoriums, which are partially attended by numbers of Earth people. These, of course, are the more highly advanced people which are serving the Earth humanity in some great capacity. These classes have been attended many times by people like Sister Kenny, Florence Nightingale, Mr. and Mrs. Curie, Koch, Pasteur, Beethoven, in fact, I could name hundreds, who come from all of the professions who are connected with the service of humanity. Many great blessings in the form of inventions or discoveries are thus given to the Earth people, which has been partially made possible by attendance in these classrooms and lecture halls. In the course of evolution, an individual in progressing upward often attain outstanding scholastic achievements in one of the very highest astral planets and will quite naturally be interested in seeking an outlet for his best expression. He will be infused with the glow of service to his fellow man. He will then reincarnate and emerge in a physical form in some lower Earth order. Very often, however, the circumstances are such that on finding himself in low order vibrations, he will be unable to express the purpose for which he came. In the seething unrest of his mind, he will send out thoughts for help which are intercepted by some of the spiritual entities with whom he is associated and who are working for his good, and in the interception of his plea for help he can be led into a Venusian classroom where the necessary lacking ingredients of knowledge are placed in his psychic mind. Thus, when he awakens in the following days, after these sleep time courses, he will begin to find the way and means to bring into full expression the purpose of his Earth life. The Earth scientist or doctor is trying to visualize that the seat of thought and concept lies within the gray mass you call brain. This is a badly mistaken fallacy. The brain is only an outward expression or coordinator of the innumerable life experiences of each individual which are reflected into it from the psychic mind. It is also said quite truly that the average Earth person very seldom, if ever, in his Earth life reaches a point where he can think constructively. When I say constructively, I mean that he cannot voluntarily construct an idea or purpose without the association of his countless experiences contained in his thought patterns, which are reflected from the psychic self. Any constructive thought must come through the psychic self from the superconsciousness. The superconscious is the part of each individual which, being connected to the fountainhead, is the all-seeing, all-knowing, all-anticipating intelligence, which sometimes trickles through the mesh of the psychic self in tiny droplets. Such droplets always are the originating sources of man's greatest constructive intelligence and inspiration. Now the time for rest has arrived, so I will leave you for the coming hours. May you enjoy your Earth life, Malvar. Chapter 23. Greetings, brother and sister. In going through my previous transmissions, I have found that, while I have covered many subjects, I have not yet discussed government and leadership of the nations of the world, and while we here in this city of Azure do not relate ourselves in our service to you in this capacity, yet it was deemed essential that this very important topic should be discussed. Throughout the ancient and modern civilizations which have existed on your planet, and these have been many and varied, yet in a broad sense they have all had many common basic elements and flaws. The theory of government is based on a natural desire of the many communities, states and peoples existing as a nation to factually integrate their many diversified ways of life into a harmonious combination with a peaceful expression of their life, as best suits their needs. I am speaking, of course, of such forms of government as you call democratic, socialistic, or communistic. In the latter form, I am not referring to that great country across the sea which calls itself communistic, but which is really totalitarian. I am referring to the pure and basic concept of government by the people. Even in the past, history shows that while some governments were ruled by monarchs or emperors, they too existed as a byproduct of the people's will. Because the nations and peoples of your world, as well as of other similar planets, have not conceived a way of life motivated by the divinity of concept which is contained in a golden rule, restricting measures are necessarily imposed by the proper functions of law bodies to properly enforce such restrictions. The peoples of your Earth planet have not yet devised a perfect form of government. Nor will they do so until spiritual orders of concept are entered into. Many of your political leaders are motivated and sustained by high moral standards. However, due to the reactionary way of life of most of the people, the leaders too must participate in such reactionary policies. This is one more example of the many kinds of treadmills the Earth people get themselves into by dealing only with the materialistic side of their lives. They have not yet learned of a united and concerted spiritual effort of thought and action which would quickly dissipate the fear of war and political unrest. We here on Venus do not sanction the use of the Table of Peace where the nations of the world are assembled as a place for strife and bickering. We do not condone the holding of the quill, which is plucked from the Dove of Peace, in your right hand while your left hand passes out the implements of war. Nor is any nation less guilty. While you are thus employed in scheming and devising ways to use your ideas and your philosophies of life in your peace treaties, your armies are shooting down the soldiers of another army, which is likewise employed in scheming and contriving to force another idea of peace into your way of life. Such fallacious attitudes of peace have bred new and innumerable wars, killed millions of peoples and decimated many nations. Thousands of such treaties have been written, and even as they were signed, the signers were contriving new aggressions in their minds. You have in the last years, and I am speaking to the nations of the world, capped a fearful climax onto the greatest catastrophe which has ever happened in the history of your Earth planet. After years of bestial bloody war, a new and terrible misuse of God's power was exploded into the world. In a few days, about 1.5 million souls are blasted from the Earth, or rendered helpless, while millions more were left homeless and in fear and trembling by this awful thing. Now must all the people of the world walk this path of fear. You know not the day or hour when your world will topple down upon you, and even now you are in fear and trembling from the awful atomic weapons, yet you are devising new and more terrible ones. Surely this mad and awful race leads but to one place, oblivion. We in the upper worlds cannot use strong enough language in our warnings, nor do you know the even more drastic effects which atomic explosions, whether thermonuclear or otherwise, have in some of the astral worlds. If you could but catch one small glimpse into these great unseen worlds about you which you call dimensions and see your relationship to them, and how these atomic explosions were letting loose fearful energies which are breaking down and destroying many of the natural protective barriers between you and some of the great astral fields of negativity. If the leaders of the nations could see these things, they would soon convert atomic devices into more useful purposes or quickly render them useless. We in our position, working with all other spiritual planes, are doing our utmost to influence your leaders into more constructive efforts at making lasting peace. As of today, and this hour, there is a glimmering hope. The leaders of your America and of the great nations across the sea have been making a united and concerted effort to make this peace factual. The history of the next few years will determine whether you are successful or whether your Earth planet will become a black and decimated cinder. It might be well for the people of each nation, individually and collectively, to band together and put their last ounce of will and constructive prayer into crystallizing the efforts of your leaders. You in America are fortunate, at this critical time, to have genuinely inspired and motivated leadership. May I also add that the past leaders of your great nation are also behind this concerted movement for peace, and should you succeed, your efforts shall richly reward you. For then it shall be that your nation shall enter into, along with the other nations of your world, a way of life which has been called the Aquarian Age, an age in which God truly rules the world through the infinitely inspired leadership of Him who you call Christ. For this time, peace be with you. Malva, Chapter 24, A Pleasant Holy Day to You, Brother and Sister. I will attempt to discuss in this transmission two basic and fundamental instincts of creation which have been implanted in the life expression of every living creature on your Earth and other similar planets. These two instincts are self-preservation and sex. It is obvious, with a moment's thought, that I could devote a whole volume to each instinct. It is these instincts which often, in a perverted relationship, cause mankind his greatest sorrows. Likewise, in a normal relationship, his most joyous and useful expressions. Many species of plant, insect and animal life exhibit strong and normal relationships with these subconscious motivating factors. The will to live and the desire to procreate are the basic elements which make life possible for all living things to survive and multiply. The tiny ant or the honeybee are familiar to you all. Likewise are the squirrels. They and many other creatures spend many hours in carefully storing a food supply against the time when there is no natural source. However, these creatures seldom, if ever, die of conditions such as heart failure, stomach ulcers, hardening of the arteries and other diseases which man inflicts upon himself in his perverted anxiety and fear for his security. While these two instincts are distinct and separate, yet they are closely interwoven and are always found in close relationship. It is these perverted instincts by which man has created for himself a treadmill-like existence. Do you remember the pictures of the ancient treadmills where a poor slave was forced to mount an endless chain of steps? This chain of steps was so geared that by its movement it would grind corn or pump water. Often the slave was forced to activate this machine until he dropped dead. In your modern civilization, this same condition literally exists for untold millions of people. The great masses of the population have created a highly competitive way of life, and so each man goes about trying to wrest from his fellow man the necessities of life. He has found it necessary to contrive new and more cunning ways to bring these necessities to him. So with each passing hour, more and more cleverly contrived ways are brought into existence to further exploit his fellow men. Nearly all Earth people have some vague notion that their material possessions and wealth are their security. Many persons thus acquire a perverted relationship, and thus it is they may amass huge fortunes which, of course, do them no good at all. While they are reveling in their false sense of power and security, They are also stricken with the pangs of inner conscience. It is the still small voice that points the finger of guilt. And so they seek to placate themselves by giving away portions of their superfluous wealth to various charities or foundations, or they may at the time of separation endow almost all of this wealth to such purposes, and while this is a good and noble thing in itself, yet always does this type of donor seek in his false sense of security to perpetuate himself forever in the minds of his countrymen, for with each gift goes his name which is firmly attached. He erects huge buildings which are called by his name, or he may create monuments of stone with his image engraved thereon, thinking that he will thus feel more secure. It is quite obvious that mankind needs a new and stronger spiritual concept to supplant this useless, unintelligent waste of life. It can be truly said that this sense of insecurity often directly has caused wars. A moment's thought on your part will bring to mind a great number of possibilities. Of course, there are many millions of your countrymen who have a more normal relationship. They try in their own way to adapt their life so that it will not entail too many of the superfluities. They also try to develop the spiritual nature within themselves. However, here again is the lack of constructive knowledge coupled with the inescapable pattern of your civilization. Thus they also have become slaves. It can also be said that the female of your species appears to be more cunning than the male. I is usually the male who breaks himself down on this treadmill years before his natural conclusion. He has contrived a vast array of chemical substances and adornments whereby the female decorates her person to further superimpose the false aura of glamour which is strongly attached to the sex instinct. And here again is a strange paradox. The males are continually creating new conveniences for their females, while they in turn find more leisure time to devote to their persons. Their homes are an array of mechanical, electrical and chemical conveniences. And so with the ever-increasing exploitation and creation practiced by the male, he finds himself led farther and farther away from a true course in life. He has even invented a great system of laws and enforcement agencies which are designed primarily to circumvent his fellow men from doing things which would be more clever than his. So he has thus created a comparatively large group of people who indulge in malpractice which is considered criminal. In this he has found ways to circumvent the other laws which have inspired his criminal malpractice. You know of these things and call them by such names as gambling, horse racing, sexual prostitution, various rackets which are sometimes interwoven with your politics. In getting into these things even I would get confused. It is small wonder that your world is in such a state of affairs. I will not attempt to go farther into this all-important factor or instinct of self-preservation. However, I would like to touch more directly upon the instinct of sex. Here again, animals and insects often express a more normal relationship than man, while it is said that man has a higher degree of intelligence, yet he seems completely ignorant of the more advanced psychic relationships of sex. He may know of the biological and some of the psychological aspects, but seldom, if ever, does he connect himself with his many life relationships in past reincarnations. Thus, in his seeking a mate, he usually follows the same pattern which is exhibited by the lower orders of animals. He or she will move around in their particular society until they meet one of the opposite gender who seems to stimulate their physical reactions more than anyone heretofore previously encountered. This seems to be the motivating factor in marriage. The very high divorce rate, which in some sections is almost 1-to-1, shows how fallacious this reactionary and illogical type of marriage can be. There are, of course, many other factors which may enter into such divorce actions. The whole of your civilization is quite conducive to all types of abnormal separations. They are all lumped together and found in the false superstructure which has been erected in lieu of a more basic spiritual concept. Very often two people who marry may have formerly been mother and son, or father and daughter, or they may have been any one of a number of combinations of such family relationships, or they may even marry from a psychic sense of guilt that they have wronged the other in some previous life. To reflect a moment's thought into the possibilities of these factors, you will begin to see how little the earthman knows of himself. Likewise, you mothers who bear children. The child who comes into your womb is not created by you. You only grow the body. He was found, Through you, the doorway back into the world which may have been his home for many lifetimes. He has been attracted to you, in most cases, because of certain harmonic frequency relationships.